and Tis the Law has the lead at the top of the stretch. It is Tis the Law in front with 3/16 to the finish. Tis the Law has a four-length lead. He's left the others behind.
Live from the backstretch at historic Saratoga Racecourse, this is Racing Across America. Racing Across America is brought to you by Pennell's Restaurant, a Saratoga tradition since 1922. 284 Jefferson Street, Saratoga, just minutes from the track. The Leah Auto Group, Leah Cars for Life. Find them on the web at leahcars.com. The new Capital OTB wagering platform. Bet any place, anytime with the new Capital OTB wagering platform. CapitalOTBBet.com, the premier wagering site in New York State. And the Clubhouse Racebook. Can't make it to the track? Make it to the Clubhouse Racebook. 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
Welcome to the Thursday edition of Racing Across America. Brian Addo, Anthony Mormino with you, right back to battle after we went through the handicappers report on what's becoming a little overcast here at Saratoga. We've mentioned it time and again. Weather is in the area.
Five
check the scratches, check the apps, all that kind of stuff.
Stuff's going to happen.
Yeah, it could be raining this afternoon, maybe as early as 2 o'clock. Hopefully it'll push out, but it could definitely be an issue and cause some problems today. So take note of that. Yesterday I had on Neil Pessin, who won Bell with the Honorable Miss, the Grade 2, with Bell's the One, his Grade 1 winner, and she ran Hughes. Kudos to him. Thanks to him. And I had Dave Grenning and Mike McAdam on as well from the Daily Racing Forum and the Schenectady Gazette, respectively. But Thursday on Racing Across America.
But one quick thing. It's nice
for
to say
degenerates.
Neil has, if all goes to plan, Neil has not prepped for the Breeders' Cup yet. Apparently he is going to have.
Well, I'll tell you what. Neil sat in this chair, and I teed him up, and I said, "So obviously,
and it's not the ballerina."
I said, "In the perfect world, you know, you run well, you come back in 4 weeks and 3 days, and you run in the ballerina." And he said, "No,
no,
I'm not coming back for the round." And when he said that, I was like, "Oh boy, this gal's tightened to the gills today." And she ran, huge because you're not supposed to be dead last off the far turn in a Saratoga Grade 2. I don't
very
care if
rare.
You're odds on or not.
Very rare.
Not the recipe for success. And she ran them all down. So kudos to him. I got to know Neil this winter at Fairgrounds. A good guy, a good trainer. He's done very, very well with the Bob Lothenbach runners in the last, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years. And he's got a really, really nice filly. His first Grade 1 winner. She won that race on Derby weekend last year in September. So kudos to him and thanks to him. But Thursday is for the gamblers here on Racing Across America. That is what we are.
Most days are.
Most days are, for sure.
There are a few races from now to tonight. It's, yeah. You kind of stay at watch, golf clap, and you move on.
Yeah,
but
so
we're mostly here to
And I'm looking forward to this segment, too, because we kind of hinted at it last week, and I actually had to make a note as you were talking last week, and I said, I've got to remember to do this. So, you know, we've been doing these ABC tickets. Anthony's doing some tries. He's going to do that again. We've got 3 replays coming up, too, that Anthony's going to talk about and talk over as they're unfolding and kind of give you what he's looking for. But as he was talking last week, and we were, you know, we do this ABC pick 5 grid, in the middle segment today, I think there's definitely a faux pas in that grid and the sea level ticket. So I'm going to get into that in a little bit later. That I think when people that you know want to dig deeper in this game, they want to play tickets that are maybe more complex, astutely constructed. Thank you. They do that ABC ticket, and that's the way to go. I firmly believe that. You get so much more coverage, bang for your buck. But I do think there's a little, like I said, a little error in what could be your judgment in that. So we'll talk about that in a little bit.
And I think one thing we should say to people, because it's when you say bang for the buck and you run the numbers, I think part of the idea is versus the caveman ticket, you would receive about 60% of the coverage of the caveman ticket for like 25%
yeah,
of the fee.
Yeah, that's basically
and
what
that's,
it is.
You don't have all the same bets. You don't have that. The reason you don't have them all is you don't feel as if each horse has an equal opportunity to win.
That puts it at the bottom level. Right there.
So you're like, you can't get, I have 100% of the same bet for 25% of the cost. Doesn't work that way. You do give up something.
Right.
But what you're saying is, in relation to the value of the chances to win the race, you're feeling as if, for the price that I'm required to pay, I like the coverage I have here. Yes, would I like the caveman ticket? Yeah, but it's not usually a good price because you're paying too much.
Right.
For horses that are 20-1, you're paying the same price as 3-1. And there might be times at the Breeders' Cup where you think that 20-1 shot does have an equal chance to win a race as the 3-1 shot. But that's the idea. I think that's what a lot of people miss, what is he talking about, et cetera. And it's like, no, you don't have as much coverage, but the amount of coverage you lose shrinks much less than the cost you're required to invest. Yeah. And that's what makes it so appetizing.
A different lifetime ago, I was a teller up here for a couple summers, long before
never
I was.
Never told me this either.
Really? You didn't know this?
Never. You never told me.
Well, you can still drive us to the
I know your favorite book
if
is.
You want.
Yeah, that's about the only thing I'm in for.
And long before I was a quote unquote professional, and people would come up to the window and they say, I want a $100 exacta box 1-2. And I would just, you can't say this as much as, if only you could say what you really wanted to in the world, it'd probably be a better place. You might get shot. I don't know. But anyway, and
might
I just,
not last long, but
like
gone.
That, you can't have exactly the same opinion on two horses. You can't like both. So when you do the dollar, whatever.
And they're probably not paying the same.
Right. So I'm like, you like both horses exactly the same? No, let's just say your base wager is $100 exacta box. The bet is not $100 exacta box.
It's 70-30.
It's 150-50, one way or the other. You have to maximize your opinion in this game, in these races. And when you're doing an exacta box with the same amount of weight and strength, it's a bad bet. And when you're doing a caveman ticket with 20-1s that are the same as 2-1s, you just can't tell me you like both horses the same. And it might be laziness, okay? You need to dope out a ticket.
Simplicity
too. But you need to take the time to make these tickets, construct these tickets, to give yourself more bang for your buck. The ABC ticket does it. Listen, you're going to talk about some tries in a little bit when we come back from the break. It's much the same. Your basic tries, I've seen a few of them so far, and you might be 1-3 by all. Well, yes. You could easily just do 1-all by all and say, I want to take all the work out of it, and anybody can run second. Well, that's not the case, though, and that's why you use the all button in third, and maybe that 70-1 who's got no hope, maybe he runs a bad third that nobody will ever remember ever again.
Well, Bourbon Thunder. That's why I said.
And that's how
it's
it
not,
works.
It's not Dak Daniels that is the key to the meat for me. I believe it's Bourbon Thunder with Junior Alvarado at 30-1 outrunning the favorite.
Absolutely.
And I would like to know what the try was with the favorite. That data would interest me greatly. But I know what the favorite was with a 30-1 shot with a jockey trying very hard for third. It's 482 for 50 cents.
That's
the key. And one thing I think that you have to get used to, and you do with the types of tickets we're writing, is you have to be willing to tear up tickets. It's not surgery. It's like, he's got these A tickets. Trust me, we wouldn't have to get up in the morning if we just came to the track and bet the 5-3-1 trifecta for $40 and I go home and I collect the money. It's like with my tries, you're like, well, you're all over the map here. You got that. Yes, I need one of them to
That's all it is.
Serpentine through and score and maybe pay $480 for a $32 trifecta, which I'm probably going to lose about 12 to 13 of them, but be in the plus side when all is said and done.
About-
you just... have to
6 years ago the group that I front, we put together a little kitty at the meet and we play the pick five.
It's not little
We hit for a very, very large number. I think it was 31, and the ticket, we put, I don't know what we put in that day, let's just say we put in $800, there were like 19 tickets with the ABC formula, and the winning ticket was obviously a backup ticket, and it was a $12 ticket. But that's the one, and that's all it takes, because as you said, it's not just the caveman will just overwhelm the fields in the pool. That's not the name of the game.
No, you can't. You just like you said, it's like, you know, with the tries, I mean, all in all, then you start doing some math. Well, why don't I just bet $400 to win on the horse?
There you go.
And call it a day, because, right, you know,
that's basically what you're doing almost.
That's what.
And then not only that, when you do the all-all, you have to have some chaos in there.
Well, now, of course, now you're in a position where
if the two favorites won 2-3, you're not even going to get out.
You're not getting out. And that's the whole part. And that's about the part, like, I also say this. We're not going to get into all of it. I'll just make a quick synopsis. And it's very applicable for the Breeders' Cup, which to me is the greatest invention sport just for gambling. A lot of times, the second ticket I buy for my tries is simply to invert the first and second.
Sure.
I don't invert the third. I'm just not playing that
game.
Yeah,
that's a little too deep,
it's
right?
It's only the first. It's too much money. And it almost gets to the point where I feel as if you don't really have an opinion.
That's a good point.
And my other thought is, especially at the Breeders' Cup, where it's fair to say, except for about 15 distaff renewals, there was prices and value everywhere.
Yeah, distaff is always
so
the one where you're like...
It's like, my idea always is, it's like a Breeders' Cup day. If the horse that I really like, and sometimes it's two horses, run first or second, I have to now be in a 80% chance to get paid. You can't handicap that well a particular race
and not get paid.
And that, the reason it's 80% not 100 is, well, I'm not buying all in the second spot. So
right,
I still have to keep getting good. With Breeders' Cup Day and reversing the second and first places, I have a smaller ticket where four horses I think can win. One of my two horses has to run well. And I always like that, because getting paid to me should be a reward of good handicapping. For me, I'm just not like a bankroll. I don't have it to throw at it. I need academic success rewarded. And that's what paring down tickets and not having enough money to be like the 800-pound gorilla just
beating
into submission. It's like, no, I have this. I can afford this. And if I'm kind of right, then I deserve. If I'm wrong, I deserve to tear them all up and move on.
Right.
I think.
32 minutes later.
Yeah.
All right. So that's a good intro. We'll take our first break here on the Thursday edition of Racing Across America. When we come back, Anthony's got three try plays, three replays to talk over. He's already hit earlier at the meet, like you said, for 482. And then I'll get back after the other break. We'll talk a little ABC and ticket construction. Stay tuned here on a Thursday edition of Racing Across America.
Welcome to the West. I'm Scott Varley at Saratoga's latest and greatest high-rise luxury condo. Starting in the mid-fives, every condo here has two bedrooms and two baths and upgrades, just like this. Check out these oversized private balconies. We also have a gym, a private lounge, and get this, a heated parking garage. To make a reservation for your private condo at the West, call or text me. I'm Scott Varley at 518-281-6808.
Welcome to Albany County, an incredible destination to live, work, and play. With easy connections to more than a dozen cities from our vibrant modern airport, it's a short trip downtown to a hive of culture and amusement. From world-class shows at the newly renovated Times Union Center to reliving the past at the New York State Museum. From outdoor recreation to shopping to nightlife, Albany County has something for everyone. We'll see you soon.
For four generations and looking forward to a fifth, Bruce Cerrone and his family have continued their 99-year tradition of delighting their faithful following with the finest authentic Italian recipes made with the freshest ingredients. Some things have changed in the last 99 years, but not Pinnell's commitment to the finest in Italian cuisine. Pinnell's Italian Restaurant, a Saratoga tradition since 1922. 284 Jefferson Street, just minutes from the track.
Welcome back to the Thursday edition of Racing Across America. Brian and Anthony with you back after the handicap report. A little overcast here. We expect rain a little later in the day. So again,
we do, unfortunately.
Check it out. Make sure you're in tune to the weather and the scratches, all that good stuff. We talked a little shop to open the program. The end of the program is Seth Marrow went over and got a little up close and personal with my good longtime friend, Peter Thomas Fornatale, at his residence, by the way, where I've spent many a night spinning records and having some brick oven pizza and all that. So Seth went over there and talked some shop with PTF, so I'm excited to see that. Got about 20 minutes, so that's going to air at the end, and make sure you stay tuned with that if you're not familiar with Pete.
Was that when Pete took his first breath?
Yeah, should be. You know, the In the Money podcast, all that, author, reputed author, handicapper, one of the Damon Runyon.
Always love his energy.
Energy.
One of the things that is going to get lost in the next generation is going to the track. It's like going to the track. And the human interaction and the people that you miss arbitrarily,
you should want to interact or
directly a link or something. You're just like, you know, people look at you, hey, you pay for parking, you do all this and everything, and go, well, they do give me something back. You know, it's, you know, my office is convenient, but it's rather sterile. It's like, you know, there's no smell of hot dogs.
So check that out at the end. Pete's always a great chat, great interview, but back to the four here, and as I mentioned before we went to break, Anthony's got three replays teed up, and they've come to fruition a little bit already, and he talks tries as well, and you hit the first show, you hit for
Well, here's funny that we thought was set. You're saying 482, which is funny, because that's the lowest denominator. I bet probably $1 part wheel trifectas for 25 years or something, so to me it's 964,
sure.
And to the $2 wager, it's 1900, so in the lexicon, it's become cumbersome.
I wish they would. They still,
you notice they
give
put
dollar pick fives, which drives me crazy. It should be the lowest.
Well,
possible.
That's what I thought Nairo went to. They don't on
they
the
did,
mutual.
But they don't
the mutuals.
Do it, yeah,
they still do the $2.
I don't get. But okay, race three. We're pretty
right.
firm.
We think this one is.
This will be on the turf.
It's going to happen.
Part of the early pick five, and it's the last race on turf in the early pick five. You've got a replay on the handicappers report. You've got Dante's Fire on top. We're going to bring up that replay last time from Belmont on June 10th, where he didn't have the best of it.
And quick note, because I like to say this before we get going. We're number three, so you got that's pretty obvious with the green silks. They come out of the chute at Belmont Park, which is a little easier on the melon. Doesn't have the dip that the inner has going
to
mile 16.
Trainers have talked to me about that.
Right, but people don't talk about it. I said to Seth once. Seth was like, I don't think so. I said, really? Watch.
Mm-hmm.
So now we're trailing. I don't think that the first part started out well. And, you know, we're just relaxing. I have a brilliant jockey. And, you know, we talked about earlier where Cody's Wish just rushed up. You get in this position and just settle. It's a turf race. We're probably not in a very good position. Now, we are 3-1 on the board, but what I liked about this race was it was his first race since December 26th, and I'm looking at this race. Now, the rails are up. You see the teletimer, but my visual impression is that this was a soft pace. I'm more compromised by my ability to run into this because they're not going to be fatigued. You want to, you know, closers aren't accelerating. They're just, generally speaking, they're decelerating slower than the others. This has been almost a merry-go-round race. I have no winning position to go to. So to me, this isn't representative of what I could get. I'm not saying it was practice. Things didn't go well in the beginning. The pace was soft. Last year, 1 second off of the layoff. Not saying that's a repeat performance, but I'm just thinking I'm on the outside now with the white blinkers. I have no chance to win this horse race. Probably no chance to hit the board. But I thought that was a very good tightener for moving forward. And I'll say this, Brian, and obviously many people follow Saratoga that don't. I was probably, I don't know, 17 or 18. Not every horse is amped up to win every race they're
sure.
in, which coming from the field of sports, you're like, well, if the Yankees take the field, we're trying to win tonight,
of
right?
Course.
But in horse racing, it's like even if you wanted to win, you're like, listen, we got to catch up, get in shape or something. So to me, and I knew I'd be at Price, and I knew I had drawn inside. So I just was thinking that he had no chance in that race, still raced well off of the bench for that finish. Jose Ortiz stays on board. I get a much better post position. I think I'm going to get better run. I mean, I mentioned that, you know, in 2020, he won second off of the layoff, whether that's trainer's intentions more so than the horse's ability. But, and I've said this many times before, and there's not many things I think when I'm gone people are going to remember, but I think I developed the less well angle.
Yeah,
I never heard anybody say that before me. And I no one's ever said, you're allowed to ask more questions. You're like, oh, that seemed like a kind of a soft fifth. And all of that's right, but I don't think that was the important part. It's like, he still has four legs. He still got some ability. And today could go better. Why? Because isn't there supposed to be pace in this race?
There should be. Now, is this, you've got a try in this race?
Correct? Well, yes. Well, right, because so this
can we
is
take a look at that try that he's put together.
And this is set up for my tries. And also, remember what I like to say. You know, you make a win bet to keep your sanity and to keep your bankroll. The horses
should always make a win bet at that number.
It's $18.
Correct.
You're not letting that ship sail.
Right.
If he's 460, you let it sail. But I'm probably not betting a try with a horse at 460 on top. And this is, you know, my angle for trifectas. It's a part wheel pyramid. And, you know, it keys the horse on top. 2-3-6 with all. And mine are $1 tries. That's the world that I grew up in. So, you know, without scratches, this would be a $30 investment. Now, this isn't Breeders' Cup Day, so I'm playing it this way.
Will you invert this? 2-3-6 on top?
You know, I might for this reason alone. I let me get one thing. I thought it was a wide open race, but I'll have to see. It's rare that I do it on without big full fields and really like a horse. And yeah, see, like if Dante's Fire is 4-1, that changes a lot of stuff for me. But this is certainly in the area because Mystery Bank, who on the handicapper's report is the horse that I added that wasn't my second or third horse with Auburn Hills and Montauk Summer. And I probably would because I think this would be an exacta. And once again, I'm thinking $2 exacta, $1 exacta prices. This could be like a $40 exacta.
Right.
And if it's a wide open race, the all helps me out. And since it's only one horse that I'm inverting, you know, it's another $30. So it's very, very, very possible. Anytime you have a $16 or $18 horse, I mean, once again, I want to be rewarded when
past.
I'm right. You have the win bet. You make the reverse. You got to get yourself in position to score.
All right.
I like Dante's Fire.
Another price here. We're going to look at a replay last time at Delaware Park. June 28th at Delaware Park. This is race 7 today. Artemis Bridge, the 2-horse. June 28th, race 7 at Delaware Park. Another horse from a wide draw last time. Say it again.
Well, right. It's his
June
7th.
Excuse me. My bad.
It's
his second race back. Thank you, Bri, in the truck. I appreciate that. June 7th at Delaware Park. What are we looking at here?
Well, this is two races back. And once again, I like to include in the race you're going to be watching, we're going to be looking for number 3, Blue Silks, towards the back of the pack. This was the race after the wintering in Gulfstream Park. So this race was two races back. So I wanted... And I thought that this horse ran almost a career best. Very good effort for Steve Claseras, Bob's brother, running horse up here, Joel Rosario, talking about, once again, a horse that fits perhaps a running style.
In a race with a lot of speed.
We're hoping
so. We really think so.
Do we have the race, I guess? Are we going to it to show the good folks? Well, my point is, Here we go. So we're looking at number 3 here, folks. So they have that shoot at Delaware Park, which doesn't really come into play here. A lot of times you get that at Monmouth Park, you get that at Del Mar. So now I'm in the back and clearly settling in, getting a good trip. I won't deny he's off 4 months. He gets a perfect trip on a temporary rail. I cannot deny that. My thought is maybe he regressed off of this. The winner is every step of the way, Sandy Lane Kitten. Now, the upfront runners, you know, this was the only
Delaware
one.
Delaware Park up front on the turf is a very, very advantageous spot to be.
And once again, you have to draw some things like it looks like a comfortable pace as a function of 24.88. They come out of the chute. So I'm just back here moving up a little bit. So now I'm in amongst the trees. Number three, as I said, along the rail, blue silks, just sort of going along in a comfortable world. You have basically 49 seconds maybe to the half mile. And the leaders are like, okay, now I'm getting the perfect trip. I will not deny this. You got to save some ground. I like how he's moving. Here's the problem. He's moving with the group. The group has picked up the cadence, which is usually death here. Now I realize, well, that's not going to work. The space isn't there that I'm going to want, so I got to bide my time. Why? You don't hit the accelerator, and you have to stop. And now the four gets off the rail, and I got a little bit of spot. Yes, I got a perfect trip around the racetrack. Yes, this was the first race in 4 months, etc. I finished pretty nicely. The winner was on the front end. I thought he ran great.
Yeah.
Now, I mean,
conversely, a little regression last time probably off such a big comeback.
You're just thinking, like, the regression makes sense to me. I must say, I cannot quantify the condition. This horse was not in for the tag, so I don't know what those allowance conditions were right at Delaware. So maybe in New York claiming 45th. But to me, I'm not surprised by the effort that was the follow-up to this. I'm a big believer in muscle regression. But I like the effort. I just think there's, especially in turf races, there's just times when your horse, as a function of the flow of the race, has little chances. So when they start, I'm watching the middle of this race, I'm like, he's running better than he should run, right. And he finished up nicely. And
very
being
difficult to close from the back at Delaware Park on that turf course, for sure. One more for Anthony. It's the nightcap, number 9, Salino, in race 10.
Which you also,
I picked on top.
We
two.
Might not be here for
yes. Now
a turf
I picked
race.
The horse on top, the dirt too, as well as the turf. So I do think it's beneficial to show this replay. Salino, the 9 today, taking the MSW job for Kenny McPeak, Jose Ortiz. Talk a little bit about what we're going
and
to
see.
And
he's the 12 here. On the outside. He's number 12, Red Silks, coming in here. First time turf, second start off.
Two back, so right?
Two back. Yep. Yes, because the other one, which might turn out to be relevant, is the Ellis Park Mile in the slop. But we got the winner here is going to be one of those every step of the way. I love horses that are compromised 72 hours beforehand by the draw. So we're number 12 on the outside here. We make the little right-hand turn, which you don't think is big, but it is big. Why? Because we want to get up close. Now, this looks to be, this is going to be death. We're going to be 5 wide into the first turn, and we're going to lose all chance. But oh, no, 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 no. Brian Hernandez Jr. saves a little ground.
Nice job to tuck in there.
He has to tuck in, but he had to give up distance. He did the right thing. Unequivocally did the right thing, the necessary thing to do. Now, what happens if he had drawn a better position? What happens if he doesn't break out to the right and he has a little more gas? So now he has to settle in to where he should be, but he's lost very important position. And I will say this. I thought this is what is termed in the game a merry-go-round race, where they just seem to be stationary as on a merry-go-round, and all that happens is they cover a distance of ground. Now, we're still in the same position, 5th. We're in the reddish silks, kind of using up, you know, gliding through, but nothing is going to happen here. But my point was, 72 hours before the race, we drew post position 12 in a field of 12. Took a little right-hand turn, lost any chance to get the position that would have been better, certainly in hindsight. So he makes the right decision on the first turn, but it dictates his outcome, which is you're not chasing down. How often do you see...
He's still running on here.
Yes, he's running nicely. Great. And the winner, how often do you see turf races? The winner wins by 8.
Yeah. Walking the dog early. So let's quickly, before we go to break here again, we're going to bring up your tries. You talked about the first one, which was directly in tune with the first replay we showed. The other two are not. So here they are. Thank you, Bri. Quickly, race four, race five. You got the same structure.
That's your
go-to structure for the most part?
It really is. I have found that it's advantageous for me for two reasons. One is, generally speaking, well, we're still standing, so that's good. Generally speaking, the horses I key on top in a trifecta. I have 10 races to choose from. I like my three horses. They're going to be a price, etc. I don't have to go crazy. To preserve the bankroll, I mean, how many horses do you really think can run second? Generally, you know, three or four in a field of 10.
And the difference between running second and third is huge, because I would, just by looking at your tickets, yes, anybody can run third.
I am a believer. I could tell you that, and in New York, the ceiling is like 50-1 on the morning line. And there's a reason for that, and I'm comfortable with that reason. Even though the horse the last seven times has been triple-digit figures, those would be like the only ones. But here's the thing. It's not worth it to leave them off.
Yeah.
You
not for $6 or
not for $6, yeah. And as Bourbon Thunder shows you, they're the ones that really truly make it crazy, which most people understand. But yeah, my go-to on an ordinary day is like a 1x3x8, something like that, in that ballpark. And I have found, like I said, it's like the $200 to $500 50-cent trifectas is really what I'm chasing, mm-hmm. as it were. And as I said, the other key, though, I can't overemphasize enough, and you know it, and you've even said it, especially with the horse I like. You make a simple bet to win that basically covers your exotic play. So if the part that you had right, which was picking the winner of the race, you're rewarded and should probably finish in the black. You don't get the brass ring. But you move it, you advance, you win and you
survive
advance.
Survive and advance.
Your bankroll stays intact. You saw the race right. You got the under a little bit wrong. But you can't let the $22 horse go by and go,
ever, never, ever.
Oh, man, I lost $1,000. No, you won, you know, $130, and, you know, you're playing to the race with $65. You know, you have to. People would say, like, to keep your sanity. It shouldn't be about that. It's like you're smart enough to preserve your bankroll.
Well, this
and you handicapped well enough, you got to get paid.
This is why, before we take a break, this is why I said to you in our initial phone conversation, you were wrong about the pick five. Because you do need to take that $211 pick five.
I am.
You know, it's not always going to pay $37,000.
I know, but the one thing that I can't get to with it is, it's just hard. It's like when everybody's with you in parimutuel wagering, it's like it's bad. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's why my trifectas don't start with $4.60 horses. I haven't tried to figure out how to make them work for me in trifectas.
But take the devil's advocate to that theory of thinking, which you are in a sense right about, but there are also a lot of people that are going to be a little hard-headed that are going to say, you know what, I'm still going to try for $25,000 today. And they're going to send a boxcar ticket in.
That's what
so be the opposite of that.
Well, you
and send an 18, send a $16 ticket in four times.
Well, I will say this. For example,
there's a lot of dead money being played.
All part of my study. The $580 early pick five yesterday was over two times the parlay.
There you go.
Now, the late one was less than the parlay.
Funky.
The late one was 90%
which
of
never,
the parlay.
Which never, ever, ever happened. So that was just an anomaly,
yes.
I think. But it's
you have to. But I'm going to get through this. But my one thought is, if my bankroll is $10,000, I turn it into 12, I won. You get 20% return on your estimate.
Hey.
No matter how you get there.
Well, that's
is the measuring of the yardstick.
But I would say if you played it how
everybody says to play it,
the 12,000 would be 16,400 instead of 12,000. Let's take another break here on the Handicappers Report. When we come back, I'm going to get into some of this ticket construction, this A, B, and C kind of thing we're talking about, and I'm going to try to debunk this a little bit. Stay tuned.
Now, is there any way
set now for the juvenile fillies turf. 14 of them across the track. Here, set on their way. And of the dance on the outside, broke a little sideways with Bro KK, but meanwhile it's going to be stopped. But running on now, and Somali Lemonade's got eight to make up. They come to the top of the lane, stop shopping. Maria's got a lot left. Stop shopping. Maria goes on. Sweet Cat is right there, hard not to like. Royal Body is running on. Past the eight ball, they come. Stop shopping. Maria for the run, still under a hand ride as they come to the 16th. Stephanie's Kitten coming out late. Yes, Stephanie's Kitten coming fast. Stephanie's Kitten, stop chopping area. Stephanie's Kitten's water.
Watched her chances, broke smartly, but so did Terra from the Cape. On the inside, Sky Lantern the Grey going well. If he can get through, can get through. Sky Lantern the Grey looking for somewhere to run. Wide, wide open. It's Terra from the Cape hanging on. Terra from the Cape tries to go all the way. On the outside now, here comes Flotilla in the light blue. Flotilla is absolutely flying. Watch the chances in there too. But Flotilla has gone right on by. And Flotilla is coming home to score. Flotilla has won it just about two in the end. It'll be Watch the Chances, Summer of Fun, coming on to finish there.
Welcome back to the Wednesday edition of the Handicappers Report.
I think we have a segment for next Thursday already picked out. The pick six as Lazarus.
The pick six.
Come back.
My
with
partner
a,
and I.
A vengeance that. By the way, it was poo pooed. I thought the dollar idea was in vogue 25 years ago, but he said no, there would be no carryover.
I thought it was great.
$165,000 on Wednesday at the spa.
I thought it was great when they brought it back to a dollar. And I said, it's going to be really, really good. I did not think it would be this good. On a random Wednesday here at Saratoga, they got $165,000 on a non-carryover day. So that might be a discussion.
Just give you a thing. In the old days, on a non-carryover, it'd be like $60,000.
Oh, I was just going to say, even 3 years ago,
$60,000
at a $2 increment. So when we went to break, we were talking about this ABC thing. I've showed it before, but I wanted to get into the one what I feel very, very strongly, and Jeff's going to have a video with Peter Thomas for Natal, and Pete and I over our 15 years of friendship have put together a lot of tickets, and we've talked about this quite a bit in construction. I firmly believe there is a huge, huge error in the ABC format, and I'm going to talk about it today. As Anthony and I talked about at the start, the ABC format is what gives you more bang for your buck.
I don't think that's ever happened.
Yeah, right.
In the 15, 20.
You're layering horses in terms of preference. A is obviously your strongest opinion. B is secondary. To me, a C-level horse is like a once-a-week horse. That means about once a week, your C-level horse is going to win. But, you know, there's something there that you might see. There's something you might like. Brian, can we bring up the first ticket here today? This is the A ticket of the grid that I have for today's pick five. And
Jesus!
Here you see it. It's a big one. But this is a great, okay, this is perfect, though. And I'm glad it worked out this way because it's perfect to allude to what I'm talking about. Okay, here you see my A and B pick five, okay, with the C picks to start in race six, which I'll talk about in a few minutes. But here's the A-B ticket, okay? And what you're doing is I've got five A's by four A's by two by three by four, okay? That's a $240 base ticket. So obviously you can see my feel for today's sequence. It's not a good feel. I think it's a wide open sequence. I think it can be a little chaotic. So you got five times four times two times three times four. So there's your A-level ticket, okay? All A's is going to run you $240. It's expensive, obviously, but it's the type of sequence I think could pay big balloons. Now you look at the B tickets, okay? Now here's my A-level ticket horses in race six. I'm comfortable. I have no Bs. It's basically saying, you know what? I'll go to battle with my five A's. You go to race seven, I've got two Bs, the eight and the 10. So what you're doing on this structure, okay, you're intermingling your Bs with your A's. So your first ticket is all your A's, that left-hand column. Then you come back in race seven, you take out the 1, 3, 4, 9, you put in the 8, 10. So now you've got your A's with the B's in race seven.
So that's ticket number two.
That's ticket number two. Ticket number three is going to be A's in race six and race seven with B's in race eight, with A's in race nine and 10. And you do that throughout the sequence. I also, if you're playing on a big budget, okay, I also like to go four, three A's in two B's. So you're going to intercede two B's with your A's. So now you've got A's in race six, you've got B's in race seven and eight, A's in race 9 and 10, and you're just intermingling your picks.
Now, do you round robin the B's? So race 7 goes with race 8.
Absolutely.
Race 7 and race 9 go together.
You have to do them all.
8 and 9.
You have to do them all.
So that's three more tickets.
That's three more tickets.
Gotcha.
And what you're going to do when you come up with this level, okay, you're going to have several tickets. And obviously, your all-A ticket is going to be your strongest opinion. The beauty of this system, okay, is that when your A's win, okay, let's say we're fortunate enough in race six for the 1, 2, 4, 5, or 10 to win. Well, what that does is now you pick up the 8 and the 10 in race seven, okay? So no longer do you just have 1, 3, 4, 9 because you've got A's with 1B. That means you pick up the 8 and the 10. And as you play this and as you get more comfortable, you're going to see that you're going to see S-E-E, no pun intended. You don't want to confuse anyone. You're going to pick up more tickets as your A's keep winning. And that's the beauty of this system. You want to afford yourself more margin for error. And that's what the ABC ticket does. Now, here's where the faux pas is, okay? If you take this same structure and you see where I've got the C level picks, 6, 7, 8, 9, in a second, not yet, Bri, but in a second, we're going to bring up my second graph here. But let's just say I didn't have a second graph and I was only talking about this ticket here. So everyone looks at this, they say, okay, he's got C level tickets in race six. So what he wants us to do is put the C's in where the A's are and then do it all. Well, no, because what that does is it's saying your C's, you feel just as strongly as the A's, right? So if I put the C's into race six and
so
I
you
do
would
the
need
math.
Like, you would need like a fractional 25-cent pick
exactly,
five with the C's.
Which you can't do, okay? So let's say we just invert the C's with the A's in race six. Well, now you got a 4 by 4 by 2 by 3 by 4. It's the same amount. Really, what you're doing is you're playing all nine horses as an A.
Yes, you are.
Because it's the same amount. And that's just incorrect. Your C-level plays cannot have the same emphasis as your A's do. And if you did it this way, that's exactly what you're saying is how you're playing.
Now, so, if your bankroll was 100% more, because that's what it needs to
be. It still wouldn't make it right.
Well, your pick five tickets at 50 cents, you would buy two of the A's.
Well, that you would.
Now you slide the C, you buy one of them.
Yes.
And that better correlates
in theory,
weighing
right. In
the
theory,
opinion.
Weighing it more is right, but we don't all have that bankroll, and
right.
It's still essentially incorrect. Let's bring up the second graphic now.
But it'd be closer to being correct.
Yes. And this is where I think you mentioned your run less well angle.
Yes.
And I agree with you. You don't hear that often. So let's bring up the second
now,
one that I had him put together.
What we should do for next week is we'll do the caveman cost and show the people
well, that's
why
a good point.
The caveman is a doesn't,
right.
Unless you're a billionaire, and if you are, why?
So now on the second graph, I'm going to move those C picks, okay, into the equation. Thank you, Bri. And now what
oh,
I'm
you pared
doing.
It down.
is what I call my super A's, okay? These would be like my A pluses, okay? So you saw in race 7, initially I had 4 A's. Well, I pare it down to 3 A's. In race 8, I still keep the 2 A's. But race 9, I go from 3 A's to 1 super A. In race 10, I go from 4 A's to 2 super A's. So now my C-level ticket is 4 by 3 by 2 by 1 by 2, and it's much, much more affordable. It's 4 times 3, 12 times 2, 24. It's $24 for a 50-cent base play, whereas opposed to earlier, it's like it's well over 150, and it just doesn't make sense. So, yes, I still advocate, especially if you're spending some money, I still advocate using C-level tickets, but you can't weigh them as the same with all your A's. So you need to pare it down. I call it my super A angle, my A plus angle. I'm taking my initial A's, I'm paring it down to the ones I feel strongly about. And that's what I did in race 7. And it's definitely what I did in race 9 and race 10. I went from 3 horses in race 9 to 1. I went from 4 horses in race 10 to 2. Because again, back to the original premise, the C-level picks to me are once-a-week horses, okay? Mm-hmm. I can't play them the same as my A-level. So whereas opposed to that A-level ticket was $240 on my all A's, I put the C's in, it's now $24. I can't play it the same. Even if I had a giant bankroll, it still doesn't make sense. You can't say to me, I'm using the C's equal strength as the A's. It doesn't make sense. And that's where I think there's a big fallacy in the ABC structure that everybody doesn't think about. They just intermingle their picks, send it in. It's not the same, and you shouldn't be weighing them the same when C-level picks are fringe players at best.
Well, I think
it's an important lesson to learn.
It is. Well, one of the thoughts I would have is, and these are just random thoughts from a trifecta player, is you have too many C's. Like, there's 4 of them.
You should not have too many C's.
There's that like race, 2 okay, of them.
But you shouldn't have, when you do your ABC, no, it's okay to have them in one race, but you shouldn't have 4 C's, 3 C's, 2 C's. You can't have too many C's. You're going to see it blows it way up. In a race like that, a 2-year-old maiden special weight, you can have it.
You now, my thought for you, as you say, where they're once-a-week horses and the system values them too highly that you wouldn't just dump them. I have to dump you because you don't happen often enough and your price is too high.
That's where.
So I have to go. I can't have a C ticket because the value never represents to the cost. And your thought is they win once a week. Well, I'd have to abandon you and be an A, B. And go forward.
Typically, when I do my group, very rarely do I have C plays. And if I do, it's something like that. I had one level of C's in the sequence today. The other thing is you have to trust your handicapping. You have to have an air of arrogance to your handicapping.
Yes. That's,
if you're going no matter what, pick 5 with there are 5 races. If you have 5 columns of C's, you have zero opinion. And you have zero confidence in your picks. You can't have that many.
See, which is different from having the all button in the trifecta. That's just smart. You're just like
the trifecta. Yeah. We're talking about running a bad third, beaten 14 lengths.
Yes,
that no one cares about
except you.
Except you.
I've told this story before.
The black type in the Mother Goose that Rachel Alexander ran in the 3-horse filly.
Yeah, years ago,
it's in the catalog page
in the Breeders' Cup when Society Selection won, and I'm like. Not Society Selection. She keyed the thing, but I'm like, Country Home. I'm like, I need to beat a shadow.
Right.
I'm like, run as hard as you can. And be like, well, no one thinks about that, but for my wager, it helps. Whereas yours is so one dimensional, winning
Absolutely.
The race, etc. But I do think that's. I like your thinking, like because. You know, you get put in a spot where you got to pare down your A's, because. The aggregate for the cost of that ticket is more representative of your opinion as a function of the A's, and it comes at a cost. Like, once again, it's like I think a lot of artists, it's like no, you don't get the same coverage. You'd have to buy the caveman ticket. You get 70% of it.
Just look at those graphics and put your own numbers in, do the math, and you're going to see really quickly it gets out of control. And well, that's why you need to pare down. Even if you're playing a huge ticket, you can't use those Cs as the same level as your As, or you will just...
Makes no sense. It's like the person...
It makes no sense.
It's the same thing as the person that came up to you with a 3-to-1 shot and a 15-to-1 shot and said, I want a $50 box exacta.
Same exact thing as...
You just weighted in the same, and you probably don't feel that way.
Nope, you don't. So that'll bring us to our final break here on the Handicappers Report, but on Racing Across America. See, it is a Handicappers Report here for us on Thursday. But stay tuned, because when we come back, we're going to take it to the end with Seth Merrill, Peter Thomas, Fornatow. Seth went over. I'm not going to give away the address.
No.
Seth went over here in Saratoga, hung out, talked shop with Pete. Great piece.
Hopefully
coming
Hopefully nobody shot us in the mailbox.
Stay tuned. And we will see you back here next Wednesday and Thursday.
For four generations and looking forward to a fifth, Bruce Cerrone and his family have continued their 99-year tradition of delighting their faithful following with the finest authentic Italian recipes made with the freshest ingredients. Some things have changed in the last 99 years, but not Pinnell's commitment to the finest in Italian cuisine. Pinnell's Italian Restaurant, a Saratoga tradition since 1922, 284 Jefferson Street, just minutes from the track.
Find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing? Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you, where's the best sports bar in the Capital Region? Tell them, Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
A Saratoga resident, you said you've been over here about 20 years.
I've been coming up to one house or another since 1998. I think in 96 and 97, I slept on friends' couches entirely, so I don't think that counts. But we rented a different place, and then we ended up hooking into this place about 15 years ago. Had such a great experience with it, bought it, and have been here since 2012.
Great spot, great little neighborhood here. You're not too far away from the track, so a perfect Saratoga location to be sure. And you talked about sleeping on couches, and as I left our set today, Sean Clancy was about to go on the set, and we were talking about your days at the Saratoga Special, and he was remembering you, and I believe it was a fellow named Frank.
Yes,
came
Frank
up
Scutoni.
And slept on Sean's couch before he even knew you guys. A friend of a friend said, hey, these are guys are coming up and sleep on the couch.
Like so many things in my life, it all comes back to baseball. Softball, in this case. The Simon & Schuster softball team, circa 1996. Frank Scutoni in one outfield corner. I'm in the other outfield corner. The center fielder, a kid named Paul Wasserman, who was one of the founders of the Saratoga Special, Sean's college roommate. We were hard up enough for cash at that point that when we were talking about Saratoga over on the bench, and he said, oh, my college roommate, he's in Saratoga. He'd love it if you come up. He doesn't mention that his roommate is a dieting jockey, not historically the best roommates, folks. But we showed up with a six-pack of Genesee beer, and we were hoping that would gain us entree, and thus began a decades-long friendship with the great Sean Clancy.
He said the rent was, a case of Jenny Cream. And I said, I'll have to bring that up with Pete. As we move on, we're going to talk a little bit about the In the Money podcast, but I just want to hit on a couple other topics. First, if people want to follow you on Twitter, it's at Looms Boldly. I love that. How'd you come up with the Twitter handle?
It's just stolen from Tom Durkin. Good artists borrow, great artists steal. I mean, I think I heard him use it a couple of times. I remember it specifically with one of the Coronado's Quest calls, maybe his Wood Memorial, and Coronado's Quest looms boldly at the eighth pole, or whatever it was.
Also, we have to talk about, because our cameraman brought it up, and I recognized it immediately, it is being promoed. Now, your shirt.
Yes. Oh, this is the JK collection from oldsmokeclothing.com. JK and Kurt over at Old Smoke have put together a series of these racetrack garments. It's so comfortable, I can't stop wearing it.
Very good, and Saratoga appropriate, no question about it. All right, let's get into it. And as I said, wanted to talk about the In the Money podcast, and one of the things I like to do when we're up here at Saratoga doing the programming, so many new people or newer people are tuning in, and I always like to point them to products or media that will get them a little more informed and entertained about the game and pull them in a little bit more, and certainly the In the Money podcast does that. Give us the background of how the In the Money podcast got going.
Absolutely. So flashback to 2014. I'm a new employee at the Daily Racing Form, there to cover the contest beat. That's a whole other story. Matt Bernier is a new player. One of his things was to be in charge of, similar to what you're talking about, player development. And I honestly don't remember at this point if Matt said to me or I said to Matt, hey, wouldn't it be cool if we did a podcast? There wasn't much going on in the podcast world around then. There was Derek Simon. I consider him the OG of horse racing podcasts. We got to give him a shout out. But other than that, there wasn't much going on out there in the world. We started this show as we were moonlighting at our own jobs, essentially. We each had other responsibilities. And as time went on, Matt decided to do his spinoff, the Matt Bernier Show, which still continues to this day. And I kept the podcast brand going, eventually bringing in Jonathan Kinchin to be the co-host on that one. And over time, it became more and more popular to the point where I felt like the benefits to the company were dwarfing the other role I had. Long story short, we ended up amicably breaking up with the DRF a couple of years ago. They're still we still do some projects together, but no longer an employee. Started this little media company and soon realized that there was a lot more meat on the bone here. We reunited with Matt Bernier for the Matt Bernier Show. We brought in other player development shows like Red Board Rewind with Spencer Lugenbuehl. We got into some industry shows like Acacia Courtney's In the Ring and Billy Koch and Michelle Yu's Owner's Box. We are the U.S. distributor for Nick Locke on his international podcast. So what we're trying to do is, no matter where you are in the game, we're trying to offer a product that, some entertainment really, that you're going to enjoy. And I should also mention, we have our long form interview show, which will be back soon, JK Plus One. And then we also have Maggie Wolfendale doing the Off Track podcast, highlighting stories of off the track thoroughbreds. So We click a lot of boxes, and I think folks will enjoy it no matter what they're doing in the industry if they check it out, inthemoneypodcast.com.
I was just about to give the web address, inthemoneypodcast.com, and fresh content is pretty regular.
It's daily, and we've also moved into the writing space. We've got different cappers who focus on various circuits. Nick Tamaro's daily analysis for Saratoga is up there. We've also got folks covering Colonial Downs on the regular, Woodbine. We're not just focused on a couple of circuits. We want to create daily content for horse players and give them a place to hang out, essentially.
And again, that's part of what we try to push up here. If you're new to the game, it's great to plug into these kind of things and help pull you in. And like me, my family, I was pretty much the only horse player, and that has been one of the great benefits of the internet for folks like me. It's a nice place to go and find the community that helps you get into the game and discuss the game with other people who are brand new, but also some experienced people who can lead you into the game in a better fashion.
It's such a great point. I feel like when I got into the game, you were very limited who you rode the train out with or ran into. There wasn't much ability to curate your contacts. I feel like now it's much easier for a younger horse player to find like-minded individuals, which not only makes it more fun, but takes the incredibly difficult learning curve in this game and reduces it somewhat. And then just as you go along on your horse playing journey, gives you people to commiserate with and or celebrate with. Another thing that's great about the handicapping contest world is getting then to take that virtual world into the real world and hang out with people in person too. We fancy ourselves a conduit for people to finding their community, and based on our listener survey, we're doing at least an okay job.
you've kind of alluded to it already with the story about taking the train to the track and how you got into the game, but fill us in. How did you get into the game?
Frank Scatone, who we mentioned before when talking about Saratoga, comes into the story here as well. We were assistants at Simon & Schuster on the legendary editorial row, and we just followed every sport to the hilt in the mid-90s. Fantasy baseball leagues, going out to watch Knicks games, whatever it was. And there was an OTB across the street where our office was in Rockefeller Center. And knowing almost nothing, we went and made a bet on that year's Kentucky Derby and then started following the horses along and found a proto horse racing website. I wonder if anybody watching remembers Jeff's Racing Corner. He was a sharp guy and was explaining the game in ways that made sense to us and made us think that we could play horses and have fun doing this. We ended up going to that year's Belmont Stakes with, it was half a hunch play, but we really thought because he was closing fast at the end of the Preakness, it meant he would be a good bet in the Belmont Stakes, not really understanding how pace worked at that point in 1996. Anyway, editor's note was the horse. We walked away with, I don't know, 300, 400, but you might as well have put three or four zeros on the end of that number for how that day changed our lives. And then discovering Saratoga, it was all over.
Editor's note on the outside giving his all. It's going to be close. Editor's note and skip away. And editor's note has won. Editor's note has won the Belmont. Wayne Lucas. Three Belmonts in a row.
Yeah, everybody has something like that where you get that first bet, and you're right. It seems like it's $1 million, and you walk out, and you have a big smile on your face. I have to ask, since you brought up a New York City OTB, I've never been into one, but back in those days in particular, lots of characters in a New York City OTB?
It was a very strange place. We were in publishing, and we had the idea of creating a photo book of OTB guys because you would see amazing fashion, I don't know if you want to call them choices or atrocities on a daily basis, and just the faces of people who looked like they were extras in, I don't know, in some instances you might say Guys and Dolls, another you might say Godfather Part Two.
As I say, I've never been, but it seems like all the stories lead into that. The Kramer, it's the same for
yes.
Kramer at the New York City
with,
OTB.
With Michael Rona as the race caller.
let's hit on some of the other things you have going that people might want to tune into. Want to bring up Horse Players Happy Hour.
Oh, thank you so much for that. We talked about community and that ability to chat back and forth, ask questions. That's what Horse Players Happy Hour is all about. It's a live stream Thursdays during the meet. Going to typically start around 3:15 and going to be races from Saratoga and Del Mar when they're running on a Thursday. Amazing opportunity. $20 to play. It's a traditional feeder on horseplayers.com to the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge, but we've also turned it into an interconnected series of contests that you can start in at any time and have a chance to win two additional Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge seats. So $20,000 added to the pot, and it only costs $20 to play. Best of all, the money goes to Thoroughbred Aftercare.
Nice. And so if people want to plug in, they go to Horse Players?
Horseplayers.com. Check out Horse Player Happy Hour.
Nice. Also want to mention live at the Brentwood. We are essentially broadcasting Neighbor Buddies when
yes.
you're over at the Brentwood. Talk a little bit about that.
Right across from the 7 Furlong Chute is the newly renovated and amazing Brentwood yeah. Hotel. Also a great place to go for a quiet cocktail, by the way. But Saturday mornings at 10:30 throughout the meet, maybe a little earlier Travers Day. We got to figure that out. I'm going to have a different guest. So we kick things off with Richard Migliori. We've got Acacia Courtney in the mix coming up, Maggie Wolfendale. Hopefully we'll get JK over there. It's going to be great. Come any Saturday, 10:30 a.m., live at the Brentwood.
And as I say, it's right across the street from our set, the backstretch gate, across the street from the Horseshoe, if people are familiar with that. Swing by and take advantage. Also wanted to mention, you know, obviously, here at Saratoga, and you're covering that with the podcast and whatnot, but you do a little international work as well. Europe, you're tied into At the Races. You're tied into Sky Sports as well. Talk about the international aspect of what you're doing.
It's so fun. I get to be the guy covering the American races, typically on Sundays, some Saturdays, in the UK. So covering Saratoga, covering the Stronach tracks, covering Del Mar. And the written piece of it, folks here can enjoy, attheraces.com. I do a Saturday tipping preview from a fixed odds betting perspective that goes up typically on late Friday or early Saturday. And then the TV coverage is much trickier to see. You might have some workarounds to be able to see it here, but it's loads of fun. They've got a great team of presenters, and I love just getting to look at the odds, and it's so fun being able to compare the tote price to the fixed odds price and hopefully give out a few winners along the way.
Yeah, and it's great that you're doing that and kind of pushing the American product to an audience that otherwise may be a little bit unfamiliar with it. So to have somebody from over here push it, I think helps make it more popular, and that adds a little handle to the pool, and that can't hurt anybody. Also want to mention, we talked a little bit about contest play already, and you have been co-hosting with Steve Bick the past few years, the National Handicapping Championship out in Vegas. I know that because we've been lucky enough to go out there pre-COVID and what happened this year. This year's event is pushed to Traverse Day, so unfortunately we won't be able to make it. But tying that in, you wrote the book a few years back, The Winning Contest Player, Inside the Minds of the World's Greatest Horse Players. Give us your takeaway from that, and was there any commonality between the horse players that people may pick up on and try to strive for themselves?
There really is a similarity in mindset and in process. Not necessarily that they have the same processes, but the dedication to hard work and creativity across players remains the same, and pretty relentlessly positive too, which makes them a fun group of people to hang out with. Hopefully what that book does is give a roadmap to people looking into contest play. I think contest play is maybe the best way to learn. There's so many great things about it. A controlled cost, ability to have action all day without wading into water that's maybe deeper than they're ready for in some of these complicated other type of bets. Of course, many contest players also are firing cash, especially as they go along. But before you get to that point where you're putting the money through the pools, you need to learn the basics, and you need to learn what value is, and come up with a way of attacking the game that's going to work for you throughout your horse playing career. Hopefully, the winning contest player, with contributions from some of the biggest names in the contest world, will help people do just that. And it's actually one of my only books that I have a few copies left of.
Ah, very good. Yeah, and it was popular. It came out, what was it, about 8 years ago now?
Yeah, that feels, I'm going to guess, let's see if I can narrow it. Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I think it was about 13 because I started working for them in 14. You mentioned the NHC as well. Hopefully I'll be able to patch in via phone. Can't leave Saratoga for Travers.
Yeah.
Can't wait to get back to Vegas next year. But hopefully I can still find a way to elbow my way in to be part of the coverage, because working with Steve on the NHC has been such a blast over the last handful.
Wanted to mention something that we try to pay attention to, too, with our programming, but the aftercare of the horses that bring us so much entertainment, very important. You mentioned the Horse Players Happy Hour. Proceeds go to aftercare, but also I know you're tied into TRF, Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation. Talk a little bit about your relationship with them.
Their work means everything to me, not least because when I got into the game, we told the Sean Clancy story earlier, he was somebody who from very early on spoke to the importance of the animals themselves, not somebody who was ever looking at horses as a commodity, but more as the lifeblood of the game, and always emphasized to me how important it was to take care of them. That's the mission of the TRF, very important link in the aftercare chain, being able to house those horses who maybe can't go and have a second career. And then the work they do with human beings as well through the Second Chances program and all the great stories there. We recently did a podcast series on the network about Quick Call and the Second Chances program. I recommend folks check that out. Bill Duncliffe did a great job. It was a collaborative effort on that one. But then my specific connection, right back in that moment when we transitioned from being the DRF Players Podcast to the In the Money Players Podcast, we didn't know we were going to eventually be making deals with the likes of the Breeders' Cup and Naira. We had no idea if this was even a good idea. And the first person who said, hey, heard about your new project, we'd love to help you get off the ground, and we think you'd be a great way to get our message out, Kim Weir of TRF, our founding partner. That's why I call her that, because that's exactly what she is and what they are. And as a result of that, we try to do as many creative things as possible.
Pete, appreciate the visit. Again, we'll tell people, inthemoneypodcast.com. Check it out. Great way to follow the game, learn about the game. If you're experienced, it'll give you a lot of great information and entertainment as well. You do a great job. Thanks for the interview.
Thank you, my friend.
You've been watching Racing Across America. Racing Across America has been brought to you by... Racing Across America is brought to you by... Pennell's Restaurant, a Saratoga tradition since 1922. 284 Jefferson Street, Saratoga. Just minutes from the track. The Leah Auto Group. Leah Cars for life. Find them on the web at leahcars.com. The new Capital OTB wagering platform. Bet any place, anytime with the new Capital OTB wagering platform. CapitalOTBBet.com, the premier wagering site in New York State. And the Clubhouse Racebook. Can't make it to the track? Make it to the Clubhouse Racebook. 711 Central Avenue, Albany.